Studios. It's me, Anna DeVlantis, here on WGN. Thanks for being with us. Hey, I want to start with some good news. We all know there's a lot of other kinds of news in the news lately, but let's start with some good news, shall we? We have in the forecast, we're going to get up to 60 this weekend, and I think that's pretty spectacular. 50s on Saturday, right? Who can argue with that? I'm looking at Tom Skilling's forecast right here. On Sunday, he's got a high of 64. Little wind, but Saturday 54 high, and then it continues to Monday 58. So that's not bad there. Speaking of Tom Skilling, he's out of surgery. Got out of surgery last night. We saw a little post here from WGN Channel 9. He's recovering. He's doing well. And I don't know if you've seen the photo of him posted by the WGN weather team, but hands down, no one looks cuter in a shower cap and hospital gown than Tom Skilling. Have you seen this, Ryan?
I have.
Oh. He is so lovable.
It's a great picture.
He's smiling. He's got his hand across his chest. And he's got that little shower cap looking thing on. And then
none of us would have wanted that picture to be taken, right?
Anyone else? I know I would have been like, please, come on. I don't want to take the cap off or put a sweater. I don't know. He's just like, you know what? I'm happy. He just looks happy, and I'm happy to see him happy.
Hopefully we'll see him back on TV here pretty soon.
Yeah, even the mayor retweeted it saying, hope to see you back on the green screen soon. And I know we're all wishing for that. So he's got some good temperatures if he gets back soon. But I think he said 2 to 3 weeks at the very, very soonest. Might be 4 to 6 is what he was expecting.
Demetrius can handle that time for the time being.
Give him a rest. Yeah. He works hard, Tom.
Sure.
Tom works very hard. So we're wishing you the best, Tom. And also, how about this? More good news. If you have debt, any debt, you got a mortgage, credit card debt, whatever it is, right now could be a chance to really save some money, refinance, take your loan, reduce the number of years on your loan. All kinds of ideas here. David Hochberg is actually in the studio right now. A few minutes from now, he's going to answer your questions and also sort of help us out, because long-term mortgage rates, 50-year lows, the lowest since they started even tracking them. So really, it might be a good time to just kind of don't look at your finances because the Dow's way down. Don't look at your investments. No, none of that. Just look at your mortgage rate, your credit card rate, what interest rate you're paying. And David Hochberg might have some ideas about, you know, how that could change for you. Save some money and put some more money in your pocket.
I'd be interested to hear what he says about maybe some of these presidential candidates and what kind of effect that would have.
Totally.
Looking specifically at Bernie Sanders.
Well, right. We're kind of a race of two now. I know Tulsi Gabbard is technically still in it, but with Elizabeth Warren dropping out today, and you saw Bloomberg just drop out also, you know, in the last couple of days, now we were down to really it's two people, and we're heading into our primary here March 17th. We want to, later on the show, we're going to show the ad. Have you seen the ad that Bernie Sanders is running to show that he's like BFFs with Obama?
Oh yeah, you got at the very
even though
end
everyone's
of it,
saying they're really not BFFs at all.
At the very end of it, it says "Feel the burn." It's Obama saying that, and then Bernie Sanders says, "I'm Bernie Sanders, and I approve this message."
Oh, I know, it's politics, baby. We're going to talk about that too. Also, with the warmer weather, are you a fan of the White Claw? They're out with some new flavors.
The White Claw.
White Claw, the spiked seltzer that got so popular suddenly. It's a Chicago-based company, but it just went like billion-dollar sales, like overnight, beating beer, and now everybody's getting into the game. All the beverages are like, we got to have a spiked seltzer drink. If you stop and pause in the grocery store now in the spiked seltzer area, it'll take some time to go through the different options there.
And it survived the winter. I figured that was more of a summer drink, but I saw it all year round.
Thought it was
people digging the claw.
Right. Thought it was a little bit of a trend, but it's here to stay, it seems like. You got watermelon now, mango, lemon, and tangerine to enjoy. Look forward to that. Hanging out in the summer sun. And then the Starbucks thing. Did you see this? You cannot bring your own coffee cup to Starbucks. You know how some people do that to be eco-friendly or save a dime per beverage?
My wife had it for all of January where she would get free coffee in it. It was part of a package deal where if you spent the money, you got the container. And then every time you pulled up, they'd fill it up for free.
Well, maybe
she paid all the money at the beginning, but
right.
I don't think she's going to be able to do that anymore.
Maybe your wife can explain this to me, because now they'll still give you the 10 cents off or whatever deal they had going, but you have to just show the coffee cup. But for hygiene reasons, they don't want to touch it. They don't want you know, passing it to anybody else or touching coffee or can't touch anything, but you have to show it.
Ironically, she gave up Starbucks for Lent, so I think she's in good shape.
She might be okay then. She might be okay. And then you saw the CPS letter that went home. Basically, you know, kind of just very simply saying, okay, here it is, parents. If your kid's sick, stay home. And then it followed up by saying students who are sick will be sent home. So we'll contact you to schedule and pick them up. That was what I read in it.
Yeah,
so,
we got our letter at our school as well. You know, ironically, while all this coronavirus stuff is going on, my son's class has two cases of strep and a pink eye. So.
See, we forget about this. And then again, flu for children in particular this year. Very, very, it's been a difficult year in Illinois. So eyes should be on that kind of stuff, too. We're going to talk about putting eye on your money because David Hochberg is here, and we want to talk about, is it a good time for you to take a look at your mortgage, take a look at your debt, look at the rates, look where they are now after that emergency Fed rate cut on Friday? It's a dramatic difference, and it might make a difference for you, could save you some money. We'll talk about who it helps and who it doesn't, and he'll, of course, answer your calls and your questions as we continue here on WGN. All right, David, I hope I did not overpromise, and we're going to underdeliver here, but I was looking at rates because I thought, hey, you know, if you've been in your mortgage for a little while, this could be meaningful. You could really save some money here.
Yes, you can. And basically what's happened is we've seen a three-quarter of a point drop in the past 6-7 months, and it's just absolutely, it's a jailbreak right now. Everybody that's out there that has a rate in the fours, you should be talking to a mortgage professional.
If your rate's in the fours.
If your rate starts with a four.
Any kind of four.
Any type of four.
4.1, 4.4, whatever.
If it starts with a four, you need to talk to a mortgage professional ASAP. And all you really need to do is scan in your mortgage statement and send it over. And a mortgage professional can look it over and tell you if we could save you money, or whoever you've used in the past could save you money. Here's another caveat. Hmm. If you 5, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when rates were in the threes, we are helping a number of listeners that took out 3.5% loans 6, 7 years ago. You know who you are. Put them into a 20-year fixed loan at a slightly lower rate. The payment might go up just a tad. But we're cutting off 3, 4 years, 5 years off the back end of their mortgage.
Which is a good thing, because if you think you can do that at almost the same number per monthly payment, you could actually potentially retire sooner. You could change your life goals 3 years earlier, 4 years earlier. It can make a difference.
It puts tens of thousands of dollars in your pocket instead of the bank's pocket. And I use the Benjamin rule, right? I make up a lot of things, right? And I made this up.
You?
Yeah,
David?
Me, analogy, man. Yeah, so I call it the Benjamin rule. If you could get into a shorter term loan and your payment doesn't go up more than $100, then you should seriously take a look at that. If it goes up more than $100, back off, go into a longer term loan and pay it off faster by adding money when you have the money. But everybody can figure out a way to shave $100, right? You just said Starbucks. Okay, why people drink that at $7 a cup? I don't know, but that's your thing. But if you eliminate 3 or 4 of those a week, it's $100 a month, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you go out one less time. Maybe you don't order the dessert. Maybe you drink water instead of the $3 soda at dinner when you go out for dinner.
Lots
whatever.
Of ways.
You know, there's little different ways, but you could save tens of thousands of dollars on your mortgage payment.
Okay, so worth it from those both of those perspectives. I saw this tweet. The average 30-year fixed rate mortgage hit a record 3.29% this week, the lowest level in its nearly 50-year history since they've been tracking long-term mortgage rates. The lowest.
Uh-huh.
So it could be substantial, but probably what if you just refinanced or got a mortgage in the last 6 months, is it even worth looking then? Or
absolutely.
How far back do you have to go?
Well, here the individuals, all of the listeners that we helped do cash out refinance or did rate and term refinances 6 months ago, we're calling them back today and putting them into lower rates because they got a rate adjustment. It's risk based pricing. So when you take money out of your home, it's a higher rate because it's a higher risk. We are bringing those listeners back today at 0.5 to 0.75 points lower, depending on how well their credit scores rebound. Some's a quarter, some's three quarters of a rate. But we're bringing them back, covering all the closing costs and getting them into a lower rate loan, and even further the benefit of doing the cash out refinance, because now it's not considered cash out anymore. We can get them into a lower rate, and we are. That's the key. We are.
Okay. 312 says, I never realized, I'm with you here. You could take a 20-year mortgage out. I always thought it was 15 or 30 or some increment thereof. But now could I even take a 23 mortgage year out? Can you do any number
Absolutely.
You want? I didn't know that.
You could tailor your mortgage any way you want. So if you have 23 years left, there's a number of listeners out there. I don't want to go back to a 30. No problem. We'll put you into a 23-year fixed loan. You want a 22? We'll put you in 22. You want a 12? We'll do a 12. You're just based upon the 25-year fixed loan. loan if you want from 21 to 25. If you want an 18-year fixed loan, it's based upon the 20-year number. So we could tailor, any lender could tailor a loan to whatever term you want, whatever a number of months that you want. Can I give you another interesting
fact?
Yes,
and then we got to go to the phones because we have a number of callers. People want to know some things about what they should be doing right now.
6-9 months ago, rates were like 4.5%.
Right.
Okay, so
I remember.
On a $250,000 loan at 4.5%, that cost, the principal and interest is $1,767 a month. That's just the principal and interest. And that's the average loan size is 250. That's our average loan size. Today, you could borrow at like a 0.75 less, 3.75. Instead of 250, you could borrow 274 and qualify at the same payment. The payment at 274 at 0.75 lower, and I'll tell you why I'm telling you this.
It puts it in perspective, for sure.
It puts you in a major perspective, and here's another reason. So 6-9 months ago, 250 at 4.5, 1267 a month. Today, that same amount of money, the cost, you could borrow $274,000 at 0.75 less, and your payment's $1,269. It's within $2. Why is that important? All you home buyers out there, you can now go out and look at buying maybe a little more expensive home because you could borrow the more money
at
for
the same
less
price
amount,
from just months
same
ago.
Monthly payment.
All right, we want to get to Mary because she's kind of, I think you're branching us into another topic too. You're talking about, do you mortgage the house to help get rid of your kids' student debt? Hey, Mary, go ahead. You're on WGN.
Hi, that sums it up. I don't have a mortgage. I don't have credit card debt, but I do have two daughters nearing the end of college, and they have loans, and I have parent plus loans.
I'll tell you
so
who to
I'm
call.
Wondering if
I'll tell you who to call. You call Ray Kaplan. That's who you call. And we'll put you, I don't have Ray's number handy here, but if it's a parent plus loan, you call Ray Kaplan first. Every single listener out there, Ray Kaplan of the Kaplan Law Group, she is the real deal.
She is. I would agree with that. I mean, we've talked to her so many times.
She is the real deal. So,
but basically, Mary's question is also kind of a broad one. Is mortgage rates this low, aren't you sort of beating the rates of other types of debt out there?
Maybe. It depends, and Ray will tell you, because she might qualify, Mary might qualify for student loan forgiveness. Mary might qualify for a lower payment, and in the future, it gets forgiven. So it's not a cut and dry answer when it comes to student loans, Mary. So please, please, please do yourself a huge favor, all you listeners out there. Ray can help you within the continental United States. Okay, so if you live in the United States, California, Hawaii, Alaska, Key West, she could help you solve that challenge, Mary. So hang on, we'll get you her number, okay?
Mary, yeah, we'll connect you too. And sorry we don't have the definitive answer, but maybe it is. It's sometimes important just to get all of the data before you make your move. Let's talk to Mike. Mike, go ahead. You're on WGN. You got a question for David.
Hi. I was wondering, I got a conventional loan for 4.5% for 30 years. And I wonder if it'd be cheaper to go to like a VA loan.
How much do you owe, Mike? I get this question all the time. It's a great question. Thank you for your service, Mike. How much do you owe on your house?
You're welcome. $190.
And what's your house worth?
$275.
Are you service-connected disabled?
No, service-connected.
So there's no service-connected disability with you right now while you served?
No.
Okay. So if you were service-connected disabled, for our listeners out there who don't know what that means, that you were injured while protecting and serving our country, the VA does not charge a funding fee. It gets waived. So if you didn't have, if you were service-connected disabled, which I'm very thankful that you're not, and thank you again for serving, a VA loan does not make sense for you as long as you have good credit. How's your credit?
I'm about a 770.
Okay, and you have income coming in, Mike?
Yes.
And how would you like to be in a 3% loan?
I'd love it.
All right. Oh, my gosh.
It's going to start with a 3, not 3%. How would you? Let me rephrase, Mike.
Under 4.
How would you like to be in a loan that starts with a 3 instead of a 4?
It works for me.
All right, hang tight. We're gonna have we're gonna have Jazz pick up, and I'll call you after the show.
Right.
Okay, but
we are so out of time. And but I want to ask you this one question because I think this one also applies to a lot of people. David, 815. What about home equity loans? I owe almost $18,000 at 5%. Can you get the home equity loans lowered too in this environment?
Your home equity loan payment and rate will be coming down once you get your new rate. Because when you get your new statement, because if your statement is tied to the prime interest rate, you just saved a half a point, and I would strongly advise everybody out there to start lumping that line of credit down now while the rates are low before they go back up, because we will come out of this, okay?
Yeah.
When we blew up in 07, 08, our complete economy, all the stops were taken off, and we were spinning out of control like a drunken dreidel.
And this is not a
different situation. We have a health challenge, and we will fix it.
Right.
Don't know when it's going to happen.
I agree.
But with the structure of the economy, there's going to be a lot of people hit, Anna. A lot of people are going to get whacked, but this isn't the same thing as 07, 08. It's a different challenge, and I think the infrastructure is there to come out of it once they figure this coronavirus out.
And this may be a way to put some money in your pocket.
Absolutely.
Thank you, David Hochberg.
You.
Always good to hear from you. We'll be back with more here in a moment. We got to talk about this. There's the Italian-American groups jumped up to the podium yesterday. They took to the microphones, and they're very angry about what Chicago Public Schools just did. They call it a slap in the face. We're going to talk to the leader of one of those organizations coming up. I don't know if you saw this story, Anna, here on WGN 133. Italian Americans very angry at the CPS right now, Chicago Public Schools. They made the announcement. You probably heard that. They dumped Columbus Day in favor of Indigenous Peoples Day. And yesterday, some of the Italian American organizations took to the microphones to say that was a slap in the face. And they're trying to get Chicago Public Schools to reverse that decision. They think there are other ways to go about this, and that's not it. The president of the Joint Civic Committee of Italian Americans, Sergio Giagrande, is stepping out of a meeting to talk with us, and we appreciate that, Sergio. Sergio, I know you don't have a ton of time, but bring us up to speed here. You're on WGN. Tell us.
Okay. Hi, Anna. How are you?
I'm okay. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
So this is not what you want. You're trying to tell CPS to change this decision. What's going on? Bring us up to speed.
So we're trying to figure out the same thing. So we want to know what's going on. So first, last year they tried going against the Italian Americans on Balbo. Now it's Columbus Day with the CPS. Seems like it's almost starting to become discrimination against the Italian American community at this point.
Yeah, so you heard about the Columbus Day change, but I think the opinion of what I've heard from several people in your organization is that they didn't really give you any notice or any chance to sort of say no, you know, let's not do it that way, or there's another way to do this. It just sort of was made. Is that correct?
From what we understand, correct. I mean, we're having our attorneys look at it to see. We're asking the CPS and the Board of Education to rescind their decision at this point. And if that does not happen, obviously, we're going to look a little bit further into it.
Okay. Now, are you the one who called it a slap in the face?
I am. I mean, that's exactly how I feel, and that's exactly how the Italian-American community feels. I mean, this is something that we've celebrated for years and years in the past. So, I mean, we start changing Columbus Day. What else are we going to truly change, Anna? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're opening up Pandora's box to how many different ethnicities that are going to come in, and how many things are you going to change for different ethnic groups?
Well, I mean, I agree with you that if you apply the purity test to every leader in American history, even Washington and Jefferson owned slaves, and that this is, you know, there are things that we remove every monument. Did you change all the currency? I get it. I have there's an Italian American who just weighed in on our text line. I'd love to hear your response to this, Sergio. 773, I'm a proud Italian American, but do we get that? Are we accepting that he was cruel to the natives, Columbus? And that does the good outweigh the bad, or what is do you not accept what he did or what his record is?
So,
I think that part of it is important to address.
It is, and it's a two part. So first of all, we're not going to go back and change history. History is history. First of all, the second part to that is, and I'll have any professor who goes against Columbus and a professor that does. It's all about the verbiage and who is misinterpreting what the notes and what all his diaries and all his, because I have people on the other side of this that says that that's all being misinterpreted, that what he was trying to say is not what everybody who's trying to go against Columbus today is. So, I mean, you could, I have absolutely no issue with having this debate. Let's do this. I'll put a professor who is an historian on Columbus Day, regarding Christopher Columbus, against somebody who's opposed it, and let them argue it out, because this is open for debate. But just because it's open for debate doesn't mean that you remove a symbol who was extremely important in our heritage and our community.
Yeah, and I know that you have some support in city council, that they're trying to get CPS to reverse this decision, saying that maybe they didn't go about it the right way. There should have been some sort of more input taken and maybe a different type of solution reached. But
we'll... Listen, we're all for. We specifically have reached out to the American Indian Culture Center. I personally have a meeting set up with... We're not here to go against the American Indians. That's what we need to make sure that the Italian that everybody understands is that the Italian American community is not going against the American Indians. We are willing to sit down, which is coming up, and we're going to sit down with them and see how we can work together on this. We've offered our parade chair, our parade marshal has offered to put a parade on for them. This has got nothing to do with Indigenous Peoples Day and going against them.
It doesn't have to be.
In my opinion, this is becoming more of a political than anything else.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what the Board of Education has done. They've made this political.
All right, Sergio Giagrande, I know you had a meeting and you stepped out of it for us, and we appreciate that. We do have another representative from your group here, so we'll continue this conversation, but keep us posted.
And I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
I know, and I hope you just keep us posted on what happens here. So thank you, Sergio.
Will do. Will do. Thank you.
Lissa Druss is here, also with the Joint Civic Committee from the Italian American Organization. All right, so it seems like there is a compromise here, and I don't know if people are thinking about this, but even the mayor, Mayor Lightfoot, said we can have both. You can have an Indigenous Peoples Day. You can have an Italian American Columbus Day. You don't have to. It's sort of like, why are we doing it this way?
Well, first of all, I want to state emphatically that we are incredibly grateful for Mayor Lightfoot's support in this, and I want to point out something very important. Our state legislature and the then governor in 2017 signed into law Indigenous Peoples Day be celebrated on the last Monday of September.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a law. And we want to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day on that day. It's also very, very, very important to point out that this is not just an Italian American issue. This is an issue for the Jewish community, the Irish community, the African American community, the Polish community. And in fact, at our press conference yesterday, we had passionate members of all those communities speak out and say, this isn't just an Italian American issue. It's a ethnic issue. And that's our coalition that we are fighting with.
What do you say to the people? And I did see this represented in some of the articles I read about it. Why not just pick another Italian American?
We want to celebrate Columbus Day, and we want to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day.
Mm-hmm.
Columbus, Christopher Columbus is many things to many Italians. We want to celebrate Christopher Columbus Day.
773, change it to Explorers Day. Honor all explorers. That's not what you want to do, though. You're justifying that you don't embrace everything that the man represented, but that you celebrate his... Or tell me what you think.
We're not here to debate,
right,
as Sergio said. We're not here to debate who likes Christopher Columbus and who doesn't. That's not the story. That's not the issue. This is a cultural issue,
mm-hmm,
versus a historical issue. And the facts from history are interpreted differently. That's fine. We understand that. But for years, how many hundreds of years are we talking about Christopher Columbus and celebrating him?
Right.
We are asking that it stay the same. And we are asking that we celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day the way it needs to be celebrated and it deserves on its own day.
How about a Friday for Indigenous Peoples Day and Monday for Columbus Day? You get a 4-day weekend.
My daughter would like that.
Can I suggest that? Wouldn't that be not your daughter's in CPS?
No, but she'd get it.
Right. Or federal employees. You'd get that. That would work. It would work for everybody.
And that's another thing to point out, that this is a federal holiday too. And there are lawyers stirring right now about federal law, state law, local, a body of government usurping what is a state law, what is a federal law.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, as Alderman Ray Lopez said yesterday, what's next? What can be next?
Yeah, I think that's the issue. I thought I also heard, too, that the idea that this was done so quickly
was
a problem for Italian Americans.
So our lawyers have looked at the Illinois State Bar of Education Code and strongly believe that the Board of Education violated State Code 105, ILCS 5. And in that, not only did they violate that code, they also violated their own rules and hearings because of not properly placing a substantive matter requiring a school board vote on its agenda for public discussion.
Okay, so are you guys going to sue?
We're not here to threaten a lawsuit. What we are doing is we're looking at all our options. Honestly, this is so new to us that we don't know what our options are. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have lawyers involved because we're talking about estate law. We're talking about school code. We're talking about rules in a government body meeting. So I can't tell you sit here right now what we're going to do next, but we're looking at everything. But I will tell you that our coalition is actually only getting stronger. The amount of people and organizations that we heard from yesterday after our press conference is growing enormously.
Listen, just a few seconds here, but Steve Bertrand has a question he wanted to get in.
So is Columbus Day about Christopher Columbus, or is it about Italians? Because I think there's a confusion here. I mean, your earlier call talked about it being discrimination against Italians. I mean, is this an Italian holiday or an explorer holiday?
I would say it's an explorer holiday named after Christopher Columbus. And yes, it is an important day for Italian Americans, but it's an important day for all Americans who want to believe in the good things that Christopher Columbus did.
So then how can it be discriminatory against Italians if they change the day? As discrimination.
Some of what I've heard is that they're talking about the history of Italians being discriminated against. And you even heard Alderman Burnett speak out about this, saying, I'm black, but I know the history here of the way Italian Americans were treated over time.
Well, we still are. We're still stereotypical in TV shows and movies on what our Italians may or may not be. Mm-hmm. We're still, but everyone, it's a much larger issue than just this.
It is. And we were out of time, but or else we would go further on that. But I still vote for the 4-day weekend. I'm just putting that out there, Lissa. See what you can do.
Let's call the governor.
Call whoever. And hopefully we'll get this sorted out. But thanks for coming on WGN. Lissa Dress. She's with the Civic Committee of Italian Americans.
Joint Civic Committee of Italian Americans.
Thank you. Thanks, Lissa. We've got more to come here on WGN.
We have your name, young lady.
Candy Collins.
You're a playboy, a bunny. That's
yes,
right.
Sir.
If you could handpick someone to hit the town with here in Chicago, you could not pick anyone better than Chicago Tribune columnist and blogger Candace Jordan.
Chicago socialite Candace Jordan.
We even got Steve Harvey. Woo! Candace Jordan is here right now. She is, just a force to be reckoned with in this town. You cover a lot of the parties and events for not only CandaceJordan.com and Candid Candace.
Yes, CandidCandace.com and the Tribune.
And the Tribune right. as well. We see your work there.
Thank you.
So 40 years ago. 40, let's just go way back. Okay, 40 years ago, Candace.
That is way back.
That's the way back files.
That's right.
You posed for Playboy. You were a playmate, how many times?
You're only a playmate once.
Once.
So
okay.
I did the
how many covers?
In December 79, and I've done 9 covers to date for the magazine.
Okay. Yep. And now you're how old?
I'm 65.
65.
Yeah.
And you're posing again
yes.
for Playboy.
Yeah. 12-page cover pictorial in the issue that's out now. It's called the Winter Equality Issue. And, I've got to tell you, this has been getting such publicity. It's like, it's really a historic issue for Playboy. And that's what they're calling it. And because it celebrates 5 decades of Playmates. And I'm actually not the oldest Playmate. There's another woman, Victoria Valentino, who's 77, who's in the same layout. So, fortunately, thank God that distinction doesn't go to me yet. But, this has blown up way bigger than I ever anticipated.
I'll bet. So you're Southern Illinois native originally.
Southern Illinois, DuPont, Illinois.
Discovered right. how? How did?
I had a scholarship to St. Louis University. I went for like a New York minute, and then I hated it because I just burned myself out in high school. And so they were hiring at the St. Louis Playboy Club, and my girlfriend said, go try for an audition. I went. I loved it. I loved being a part of a so-called sorority of, bunny sisters. I'm an only child, so it was like a whole family for me from the very beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, and from there, I did a Best Bunnies pictorial that was shot in the magazine, and they called me shortly after at the Hub here in Chicago and asked if I wanted to transfer to the club in Chicago. And of course, I jumped at the opportunity. I mean, it was like entering the land of Oz when I came.
And you lived in the Playboy Mansion here in Chicago.
Yes, right in Chicago.
For some time. How long were you there?
3 years. Yeah, 3 years.
That, you could write a book on that
one. Definitely. If I had a better memory, Anna,
you're too busy enjoying yourself, probably.
People
coming and going. Can you name a few?
Well, the Rolling Stones were there.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, obviously Bill Cosby was there, sadly. But Shel Silverstein would write, a lot of his poems and poetry with the girls and ask their opinions strumming his guitar on the edge of their beds. And I mean, James Caan. But
that puts a different spin on the Giving Tree. I didn't know he was there.
There you go. He was a regular visitor. But anybody who was anybody wanted to be at the Playboy Mansion and for the party. parties, both in Chicago and LA. So, I mean, he was the master party giver. He was the ultimate host, and the spreads were so lavish. I mean, you know, lobster and all, you know, champagne and, you know, butler service everywhere you looked, and beautiful people, and, you know, the settings, of course, both right. here and in LA. I mean, you just couldn't beat it. It was a moment in time.
Right. What a thing to experience. Yep. But I feel like, you know, okay, so then there's this part of it where you're unapologetic about the people who say, well, look, you know, you're posing nude and there's this objectification of women and stuff like that. You're just like, I'm embracing that. That's what you wanted to do.
Oh, I'm unabashedly non-apologetic. I mean, I think that what I did, and for me personally, now this is just for me personally, this is not for everybody or every woman. I mean, it's not everybody's goal, obviously, to be a playmate. But for me, it was truly the best decision I ever made. It brought me to Chicago. I mean, in a roundabout way, it gave me the life I have now with my husband, and certainly continuing 40 years later, here I am still with this Playboy family. I mean, Hefner was and is, will always be somebody special to me.
Yeah. And so did you skip a beat, or did what happened? Did they just call you out of the blue and say, hey, Candace, we need you to do it again?
Well, you know what? I've said this on a couple other shows, but I, you know, the way this happened was really surreal, because my husband and I were in Dollywood, which, don't laugh, Dollywood. We love Dollywood.
I would like to
it
go
was
to Dollywood.
On my bucket
I would
list.
Never laugh at that.
No.
It's on my bucket list.
Oh, my God. It was fabulous. And, you know, it's in the South, kind of, you know, Tennessee. And so they've got all these fabulous fried food stands and, you know, chicken fried steak and funnel cakes. And I mean, I was eating every single piece of fried food that I could get my hands on. And when I got this email from Playboy that they asked me, you know, would I be interested in doing a 12-page cover pictorial? Hello. Not much, time to think about that one. That was an immediate yes. Of
and course, you just had all the fried foods and you're thinking, I'm not really ready for.
No. But I got ready really fast. No, I stopped eating completely, like a raisin a day and just water for like 2 weeks. And then I was ready. I was locked and loaded by the time I got to L.A. for the shoot. And, you know, these girls were decades younger than me, and I still felt very confident in my
you
own
look
skin.
Gorgeous. Oh, I will say, I saw that there was a video of you during the shoot. The pictures I saw, you had some clothing on.
Yeah, no, it was not.
It's not a full.
None of the girls are completely nude. It's semi-nude, and it's actually implied nudity is how they explain it. And so, you know, everybody's in underwear, their arms across their chest, or things like that. And so it was I thought it was extremely tastefully done. And the girl who shot it, her name is Nadia Lee Cohen, and she's a Vogue contributing photographer. And she has really crazy, you know, out of this world ideas for shoots. And she did it proud. I thought it was a beautiful layout.
Now, why do they call it the equality issue? Is because of women of all ages are celebrated?
All ages and all ethnicities. They had in the pictorial, they had the first African-American Playmate of the Year, the first Mexican-American Playmate of the Year, and obviously Victoria, the oldest Playmate at 77. And so, yeah, Playboy's become very, very diverse. And that's one of the things that I really love most about the direction the magazine's going in. I think that, you know, that for a while there, they tried to do the no nudes. And
they tried to be like Maxim.
Oh, yeah.
Because they said, well, they're doing better than us, so let's be them.
Right. And it's like going to McDonald's without hamburgers. It was ridiculous. You couldn't do that. And so that's why, fortunately, they've gone back. And even then, it's not strictly nudity. It's very tasteful. And I'm really happy with it. I love it. I've always been a fan of Playboy, and never more so than now.
Is it Hef's son who's in charge?
No. No Hefners are involved with the magazine at all. So,
and it's based in LA now, no longer it's been
LA.
Years since it's been in Chicago.
Right. And it's when I met the people that were, you know, doing the magazine, there are a lot of millennials and younger people, but they were so enthusiastic and they had such a grasp on the past, the history of Playboy, and so respectful of it. But yet they had a great new direction to move in with it. And I'm really excited about it.
773, what year did you pose? I can't wait to go home and find the issue.
December 79.
She's beautiful, I should say.
You're sweet.
That was part of it.
Yeah.
79?
Yeah, December 79.
Was the first time you posed in Playboy.
Right.
And then over what period of time did you pose 9 more times?
Well, there was other covers. I did an Eyes cover that was like an iconic cover that won a lot of awards for Playboy. There was the pink bathing suit February 79 cover. And then there was a I did Spanish covers. I did oh my God! There was all different covers for some national, international magazines.
And when is this one out with you posing?
It's out now.
It's out now.
Yes.
So you can get the issue with Candace Jordan and check it out.
Right. It comes out quarterly now. So
quarterly. Okay, yeah. I think it's like you have to. It's no ads anymore, right? Is that the deal?
No, they have ads.
Oh, they have ads. Oh, okay, yeah. I thought they went ad free and tried that for a little while.
Well, I don't know. I might have missed that.
That little part bit, right? That was like
history.
A month, maybe. I don't know. But that's not where it is now. No. Okay, so find Candace Jordan and check it out. I also want to ask you, because I always see you at the events and the charity events across our area. You're always there for Candid Candace and Candid Candace TV. And you're just, it seems like you are aware more than anybody I know of the way this town turns out for charities and helping others. And you are interviewing everyone from the celebrities who turn out to the regular folks who show up and try to support a cause close to their heart.
Right. Thank you. And, you know, there's so much going on in Chicago. I mean, you could go to a charity event like four times a day practically, and it seems to be more than ever. But I'm going to mention just a couple if I can that are kind of near and dear to my heart. And the first one's Common Threads. They're going to celebrate their 15th anniversary with Chef Takeover on March 16th. Now everybody knows Chef Art Smith. I mean, he's the fabulous chef,
Oprah's fried chicken guy, personal chef.
Yes, exactly. Well, he's lined up 30 chefs for this event that's going to be at the Joe B. Arts Center, and all the proceeds are going to benefit obviously Common Threads, which is a cooking and nutrition education program that's in the Chicago Public Schools. And to date, they've reached more than 500,000 kids and families and educators nationwide. So I hope everybody can join us. I'm an honorary chair. I'm excited about it. Cool. And it's just commonthreads.org for tickets.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah, and one more.
Okay, one more. We got time for one more. Let's do it. I know you probably have 1,000 more, but we have time for one more.
Well, this one is for all the fashion-loving people out there, and it's called Retrospect. And it's a fabulous vintage fashion event that's going to be in the Fulton Market District on April 25th and 26th. It's founded by Sally Schwartz, who runs the Randolph Street Market, that fabulous vintage market that's every month. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to have all kinds of things happening, and it's a curated collection of vintage clothing, and a portion of the proceeds for the weekend will benefit the Costume Council of the Chicago History Museum. So there's that.
There's a couple of things there. Okay. Yeah. Candid Candace, Candid Candace TV. You are awesome, Candace. And I mean, wow, you go.
I adore you, Anna.
It's mutual. I just feel like that this is, I just saw this. I thought, wow, she's at 65. She's going back and doing it again. And that's a really cool thing.
Yeah, so. And I'll be ready at 80.
You said I'm back, right? You'll be back.
I will be
back. If they ask you again at 70 and 75 and 85,
never
fine.
Say never.
You're there.
I say yes
and you
to
should
almost
be.
Everything.
You're gorgeous. Thank you, Candace.
Thank you.
Good seeing you.
You too, Anna.
Enjoy the afternoon. We've got more coming up from here on WGN from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's the news at the top of the hour. Anna here, 208, and all right, so we talk about parenting a lot on the show, and one of the things that comes up is that we've heard of helicopter parenting. You probably heard of that. Sure, that's when you hover over the kids and you drop in and you solve the problems, or getting the, you know, start to manage their affairs from up above, and when you're needed, you jump in. Snowplow parenting was the other one we talked about recently, and that generated a ton of response because we're all learning snowplow parenting means you go out in front of the kids and you smooth out all the obstacles so that they don't have to deal with anything, and you make sure the path is really smooth and that they never have to fail, and that's happening. Then there's the bubble wrap parenting, which is kind of self-explanatory. I mean, basically, I think the question was that I had is, are we over-parenting? Is there too much micromanagement? Is that really happening? I mean, you see scandals like parents paying for their kids to get into college and, you know, the fake crew teams and fake athletes and all this stuff. And that was a surprise to me. I didn't realize all of that was going on until it happened. And then you start realizing that there is this element there, that that's out there. So we brought in an expert. Dr. Alan Childs is here. Now, Dr. Alan Childs works with children. He also does couples therapy and marital counseling. He's a clinical psychologist. And Dr. Childs, I'm so happy you're here.
I'm so honored to be here, Anna.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, we talk about these issues, and I feel like, is it just the headlines, or maybe are we over-parenting? Are we micromanaging our kids too much right now?
I think very much so. Parents tend to over-manage, I think, because of their own anxieties of what's going on in society these days. I think parents feel that their children need to be number one. They need to be number one in their class. They need to be the valedictorian. They need to get the best colleges. They need to be number one on their soccer team, number one on their football team. And I think the competition factor really heightens the parents' anxiety.
Right.
And, you know, Anna, what happens is that the anxiety of the parents is then projected onto the children, and they just become so overwhelmed, and then they become anxious and even depressed.
Is that what you're seeing? When you see kids come to you, you sort of dig in a little bit, and maybe there's an expectation level at home that's a little too much?
Great question. Very much so. I think the expectation level tends to put the children in a position where they feel they have to do the best and that they can't really even make decisions. Mom and dad want them to be the best, and they do the best they can do, but it's just so overwhelming for them. And then they become anxious, depressed, and overwhelmed. And then if they can't reach the highest level in school, then they feel like they let the parents down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole nother layer of emotional concern.
So what do you advise parents in this world where it feels like kids do, even kids, I think, compare with each other more than ever before because they can take to social media and present this perfect airbrushed image and everything's great. And look, I got accepted to all these schools and everything seems to be going so great, makes things look better than they are.
Exactly. What I really recommend, Anna, is that parents always allow the children to make decisions for themselves, that they have to set some standard where they can say, I can do this, I can do that. Hey, mom, it's more of a democratic parenting approach. I think children need to be able to work together with their parents saying, hey, I think I can do this. I can make these decisions. I'm interested in this school. I want to do this job. I want to apply to this college. And kids have the opportunity to kind of become more independent. Because
mm-hmm.
I think what happens, Anna, is when children aren't allowed or encouraged to foster their own level of independence, and when parents are overly protective, then the children have a very difficult time as they enter into either high school, college, being able to succeed on their own. And I think that's really very, very hard on them.
It's hard not to interject at all because, you know, you feel like you see them doing things and you think, oh, well, you know, I wonder, you know, that's not maybe not the right path. Be meaning like, you know, that can be dangerous. I don't know, even the groups of friends that you're with and things like that, you worry that they might not be the best influence on them. But what would you say to that?
You know what? What I say to parents is your kid has to learn. They have to kind of scrape their knee and learn when they get a bruise and understand, oops, I made a mistake. You know, it's like it's really interesting.
You have to allow them to fail.
Yeah, you allow them to fail because in my opinion, professionally and clinically, how I kind of present this with the parents is that, you know what, sometimes to succeed, you have to have some failure.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to bruise your knee, you know, or break your arm even, you know, or have some of that tough experience, you know, whether it's athletic related, whether it's academic, because I think children need to develop insight and understanding. So they grow developmentally that they can feel like, wow, I've really learned. This is really good.
The other thing that is a thing now is you see parents trying to choose friends for their kids. And it's at the very young level. I mean, this is before they choose their colleges for them, apparently. They choose their friends. And I just wonder about, it just see, I don't know why it's all happening now. It didn't seem like when I was growing up, any of that happened. And I just feel like we've moved into this new frontier.
Well, we have. And what it does is create a competitive strife, which is an unfortunate situation because of the competition factors. A lot of parents want their children to be with certain kids that are like have high academic grades or like they are the number one football player or they're the jock or they're the, you know, they're really the top scholar in the school. And what I really encourage parents to do is allow children to have a lot of different types of friends, different types of experiences, because that really gets into the whole notion of empathy, too, and learning to understand what other kids feel or what they experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, really encourage the parents to really allow their children to have a lot of open experiences and make decisions on their own.
All right, we want to get into stress because that's a major issue in marriages with children, in marriages without children. And we also want to talk the important role of grandparents. I know you write articles and you publish on a number of topics. And there's one thing that you just have this really great approach to the role grandparents can play.
Thanks, Anna.
In really strengthening kids' lives. It was eye-opening to me. So we'll get to that, too, with Dr. Alan Childs right here on WGN. All right, Dr. Alan Childs is here. He's a licensed clinical therapist. He works with children. He works with adults. He works with couples, too. And I got to tell you, Dr. Childs, we were talking on the show a couple weeks back, and I was amazed about the reaction to this because we put out there this simple question from a listener who had said, you know, should I pay my grandparents, the grandparents of my child, for watching my child because they do it all the time, and I just feel guilty, and I want to know, should I be doing that? And we heard from so many grandparents who said, they talked about the meaningful role they have in the grandkids' lives, and that it was meaningful for them, and it was stimulating in so many ways, and it kept them active and healthy and young. But also, the parents were like, "This is great to have someone you trust and is part of my family history and be part of my kid's life." It just was this wonderful conversation, and I know you publish on this, you've written about this, and you talk about that important role.
Okay, exactly.
No surprise to you, in other words.
Not at all. I'm a grandparent fan, let me tell you. Grandparents provide an emotional and safety net for the entire family. They really make grandchildren feel safe and secure, which I'm an advocate of. That's huge. Just those basic safety and security aspects. And what also is interesting is that grandparents share like their experiences, their cultural and heritage experiences. Mm-hmm. And it's really such an emotionally intimate and kind of a unconditional supportive kind of love. In answering your questions about affordable child care options, if you want to do that, it's grandma and grandpa. Because grandparents love to be with the grandchildren. It's their life. That's what they have to look forward to every day.
I just think sometimes you have to watch out for, are you leaning on them too much? Are the kids really young and active and they can't handle it for extended periods of time? I mean, there are those things to watch out for.
Yes.
And then certainly the appreciation part of it. You can always do something for the grandparents and tell them, you know, to show your appreciation, even if you're not paying them per hour or
sure.
per day.
It, even beyond that, even just caretaking, I found that research says this, even in my articles, Anna, is that close grandparent-grandchild relationships during teenage years are associated with less behavioral and emotional problems. And they're going to have less issues.
What is that all about?
Because I think what happens is that the grandparents kind of share their experiences and it kind of are an outlet. They kind of can sit down with the grandchildren and talk about life and how things were 15, 20, 30 years ago.
Without the pressure of setting rules or being that sort of parental figure.
Yes. And I have found that so many teenage children, even children, little ones, just love to hear about grandma and grandpa's life. What it was like.
Yeah, they do.
It's very emotional. And it's also good for the grandparents to be able to share that and have that identification with the children as well.
Something so special about it. And it just warmed my heart to hear the stories because it just works so well in so many cases, it seems. We have people here weighing in about parents are not doing their kids any favors by removing the obstacles. This is the issue we started out talking about, which the snowplow parenting and the helicopter parenting and the bubble wrap parenting, which I think is a funny way of saying it because you see, you know what it is when you hear that, right? Uh-huh. We've all seen this.
Sure have.
You make sure that the kid has no opportunity to fail and always will succeed, and that doesn't ever work, right?
Absolutely. It doesn't. It's, again, allowing the children to have the autonomy and independence. A lot of times, the parents don't feel that they need that children should have that. They want to have that complete control. And I think the more control, back to all of this, is, again, it's going to increase the anxiety and a lot of tension for the kids. And the kids just aren't going to feel like they are able to progress and feel good about themselves.
708, this is a grandparent. I've done it for years, babysitting, and no amount of money could be paid for the joy and peace of mind. And happy to help my daughter. 630, I hear from grandparents who won't call you. They're my peers. Many feel taken advantage of and used and often worn out. That's the thing you got to watch out for.
Exactly, you do.
And then 319 says, pay the grandparents. It's taking advantage. And I'm a grandparent. So I guess you got to take the pulse on what's going on there. Again, really young kids and a grandparent who's not up to the task, I think, can be a challenge.
Very much so.
Maybe you're taking advantage there.
Exactly. And that has to be paid attention to how much, the amount of time, the resources, the environment, whether grandma and grandpa can even, take care of themselves at that point.
Yeah.
I think it's a great
point. And check with your siblings. I find that because I have two sisters with young kids. And a lot of times we don't realize everybody's leaning on grandma for one weekend.
Exactly.
And she's exhausted. We're like, well, why is she exhausted? Well, of course, she's exhausted because she's taking care of six kids.
Exactly.
Instead of, think it's just yours.
Exactly. And a lot of time, grandparents don't even want to say anything. They'll do it no matter what because they love the grandchildren.
Yes, it's true.
They're number one to them.
Pay them and write it off on your taxes.
Exactly.
Hey, that's a good tip around tax time.
Yeah.
Yes.
I agree.
815, you just made me feel guilty for moving to Florida after years of helping with the grandkids. I bet they're missing you too. That's the way it goes. Like, oh no, they're moving away. Don't let that happen. 312, what about grandparents who give up their personal friends to take care of grandkids? So there's an opportunity cost to it, right?
Exactly. But one of the big challenges, a lot of times parents, mom and dad will say, no, you're not going to go live with grandma and grandpa. I'm not going to let you do that.
Mm-hmm.
No, because grandma and grandpa are a lot of times are permissive parents. you know, they're the permissive parent style.
Right.
They say, oh, they, you know, they eat what they want, have all the candy they want. And it's a little different.
It is,
you know,
different.
It's a little kind of Disneyland.
I've noticed that in my own family. There's a lot of sugar going into the child's mouth, and that happens. But, I mean, I don't know how you set strong rules when you're not paying them and you're just they're watching them. It's kind of their rules, right?
Exactly.
That's how I feel. I'm sure others feel differently.
Yes.
All right. Before we're in our limited amount of time left here, Dr. Childs, I don't know if you've read a headline or seen the news or heard anything, but there's a little bit of stress in the world right now. There's a fair amount. And I'm sure you hear this with your clients. I know you talk to couples. You talk to children, you talk to parents and kids and all kinds of things. And I guess, you know, just kind of coping mechanisms, coping ways to deal with what we're taking in the world right now. Is there sort of like something you can tell us about the kind of advice you give people?
What I usually tell people is to take the time with each other to make sure you don't spend too much time on the internet, you know, on the social media, but take some time and maybe just sit and have dinner and just talk about your day. Talk about some of the fears or worries and the good things and the bad things. Mm-hmm. You know, not focus on the negativity, but like plan events, plan a trip, you know, plan going away for the weekend. Try to come up with more of a positive approach and more, you know, supportive versus the negativity. Mm-hmm. Because I think social media now is tending to focus on such a negativity, unfortunately, with the coronavirus and, you know, the suffering and pain that people are, a lot of fear. And I think people need to really zero in and focus on, hey, what can we do that's good for each other?
What about talking to your kid about coronavirus? I know that actually that age group so far, they say, is finding they're not having the same kind of serious effects that older adults are. The younger population is not as seriously affected so far. That's what we've seen. But still, what do you say to them? They're obviously hearing it.
Yeah, what I say to them is, as far as when it comes to the children, is not to overemphasize, but focus on the actually clinical aspects of, like, hygiene, making sure they're, you know, washing their hands, taking care of themselves. If there's, you know, a lot of coughing, kids aren't feeling good, you know, be aware. Again, it's awareness, mm-hmm. but not again. You know, I don't want to see them become, you know, more paranoid or more overly concerned where they can't function or where they can't sleep.
Or hypochondriac,
right.
Potentially.
Right, because I found
don't touch anything.
Exactly.
Don't touch. Wash your hands.
Yeah.
Right. It can get a little crazy.
Exactly.
It can. We're seeing it. We're definitely seeing it.
And so what's happening is it's heightening the awareness. It's heightening everyone's anxiety. And what I'm saying is, you know, I think just be cautious, be aware, and step back and you know, pay attention. And if there's something unusual, talk about it.
Right.
But I think to be together and to just continue on with life and have fun and enjoy each other.
Food for thought.
Keep the communication going.
Amen. Thank you, Dr. Childs. Dr. Alan Childs, good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks, Anna.
847, I'm not lucky enough to have grandchildren. I do help our neighbors by watching their kids after school until the parents get home. I don't charge, but it's good for me in that it connects me to the younger generation. And then they help me with the problems I have around the house. It's a win-win. That is an awesome situation there. 226, I'm back with more here on WGN. Anna here, 232 WGN. Dr. George Gavrilos, also here in studio. He's the chief pharmacy officer of Green Care Medical. Background is in critical care. Isn't that right, doctor?
Yeah, Anna, thanks for having me on.
I'm happy you're here. And part of it is because you are a non-alarmist type of person, and really there's no cause for alarm, and yet there is alarm everywhere.
Yeah.
And you've noticed it, and I've noticed it, and that's not necessarily good for us.
Yeah, I was speaking with Steven before we came here. He's a bit jealous that I'm
Dr.
on.
Dr. Steve Salzman, who's here regularly.
So, hi, Steve. So, we were talking.
Don't get jealous, Steve.
Yeah, don't get jealous. We were talking a bit beforehand about how, you know, in the decades collectively that we have in healthcare, it's easy to look at data and manipulate it and skew it and interpret it in ways that either, you know, cause fear or ease anxieties.
Yeah.
And so, if we look at the statistics that are available for coronavirus, predominantly from the China Center for Disease Control, if you tease away a lot of the stuff, what you're finding is that it's really a vulnerable sub patient population group that's at risk. And
okay.
So the fear and the the irrational changes in the markets and people, you know, stocking up on hand sanitizer and masks and Kleenex and, you know, all the pandemonium. If you really look at what's going on.
Well, who is at risk? You mentioned at risk. There's a subpopulation.
Yeah. So the death toll in China, when teased out, the majority of people who were affected and who passed from coronavirus were 80 years old or older. And of that patient population group, the majority of them had underlying chronic conditions, which would probably predispose somebody to pass from this disease. Those include type 2 diabetes, heart disease, lung disease, those who are older, those who are frail, those who have immunocompromised states of care. And so really, especially now with the news last week about an increased access to testing and shortages in those labs for available tests, I mean, there should be real focus on the patient population who's at most at risk.
And so are those people, okay, I'm just help me out here, because we heard our health officials tell us just a matter of days ago, there's going to be voluntary testing here in the state of Illinois, and that's going to be up and running very soon. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that means you can, what do? You go in, you can test and see if you have coronavirus. But they're actually saying, let's prioritize who shows up. They don't want everybody just showing up, and I don't even know if it's available yet.
Yeah, so federal health officials this week announced that if a physician deems it appropriate, that anyone can be tested for the coronavirus. One of the issues with that, though, is that we don't have the institutional support from a laboratory or clinic perspective to be able to handle what would be the influx of the number of tests sent to address the pandemonium that's ensuing. Mm-hmm. And so tests are being developed, and we hope that there, in the very near future, is an increased capacity to test for this virus. However, I think priority should be given to those who are at most risk, the patient population that we just talked about.
On the show, we should say, Dr. Gavrilos, a couple days ago, we talked to a guy who has coronavirus, and he called in. He still has the virus, so he was sort of self-quarantined in his house. He had moved past the symptomatic phase, but and his name's Carl Goldman. He's 66, and he just talked to us about it. And his opening line to me was it was so good to hear. It was, yes, I have the coronavirus, and no, for me, it's no big deal. Here's a little bit of that interview from a couple days ago when he called into WGN.
They shipped me from Travis to Omaha with two other of the people quarantined. So there were three of us with the virus and our three spouses. I was put on in an ambulance, taken over to a biocontainment unit here in Omaha. And there's no cure right now for this virus. There's no antibiotics. There's nothing they can do. They gave me a little ibuprofen to get my fever down, which was already down by then, but to keep it down. And they gave me every single flavor of Gatorade. I've now been through the entire rainbow of colors of Gatorade multiple amounts of time.
And he tells his favorite color was the light blue, by the way.
Look, I think Dr. Salzman's talked about this a lot. The coronavirus is a virus, and irrespective of the virus type, there are limited options for treatment, but most treatment options are geared around supportive care. Mm-hmm. So I think what the message that should be spread, which is what Stevens talked about before, is that we should allocate resources in the healthcare system to those most vulnerable. People shouldn't panic and freak out and run to their ERs or urgent cares and use those resources that may have otherwise helped other patients. You should definitely use your primary care provider services first as a gateway to an advanced level of care. And given that there will be a gateway opening for an increased availability of coronavirus testing, I think what's most important is at least a screen for the flu first, right? So don't run and ask your doc to send in a test to make sure you don't have the coronavirus if you haven't even tested for the flu. Mm-hmm. That is more of an issue.
Far more prevalent.
Especially in the Midwest.
It's a tough season, actually,
for us. Yeah, it's a tough season. Looking from 2004 to 2019, influenza strains and effectiveness of the vaccine, I mean, we know that in 2019, as about between a 20% and 30% effectiveness rate through the Midwest right now. We don't expect the flu to dissipate in terms of its presence in the Midwest till about end of March, early April. So it's more important to address those things, not freak out about coronavirus, not freak out and everybody gets tested, and just focus on what we know.
And the hope is that I've heard is that like the flu outbreak or the flu, it tapers off in when the weather gets warmer. That's what we typically see. And they're hoping that this strain of the coronavirus will do the same. But is that known? Do they know?
So I think because of the novelty of this strain, there's a lot of speculation. I think that supportive care, preventative measures, and all the things that have been discussed on your show for the last several weeks are the most important. Mm-hmm. We know that we're months away, if that, from phase one testing of any vaccination, and so we shouldn't be anticipating that anytime soon. I think hand washing, protection of the oral and oral mucosa.
Don't touch your face. They keep telling us.
Don't touch your face.
It's terrible. For
avoid public places for an extended period of time where you know that you have a predisposed patient population. Check on your elderly loved ones, make sure they're doing okay, and we'll wait this thing out. It's no reason, no cause to freak out.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. That feels good to hear it from you. I believe that myself, but it feels very good to hear it from you, a doctor. The other thing you are here for, though, is a charity organization that you've been very involved with, and I want to switch gears on that because there's a cool event happening next week.
Super
that we
cool.
do want to talk about. Now, it's Make-A-Wish.
It is.
And your family, your aunt, who's a school teacher, was originally raising money. Is that how it got on your radar to get involved, or what happened, George?
Yeah, I'm a Southside guy, born and raised in Oak Lawn, and my aunt and Sophia Georgelis and her colleagues, who are teachers at Oak Lawn Hometown Middle School, got involved with Make-A-Wish a long time ago. Through their fundraising efforts, have donated more than $500,000 to the cause. And
how about that? A teacher in a school, we were able to raise that kind of money?
Southside Middle School, yeah. Just, blue collar and just
how
put their nose to the grind. Yeah, they're amazing.
What did they do?
A number of things. So Sophie got local police and firemen to get involved with volleyball face-off. They have a jeans day that they used to do, a huge walk-a-thon with involvement from Make-A-Wish.
How about that?
Yeah, and what's nice is a lot of the time the money that they raised was able to help grant wishes for children in the community. So a lot of close to home stories, and that's how I got involved. Yeah. So when I was done with residency training here in Chicago, I got the opportunity to join the associate board at Make-A-Wish Illinois, serving on the executive board for the last few years. And we raise funds for the foundation through a number of charity events, the next one being Wishes Uncorked, which is on March 12th.
So next Thursday, March 12th.
Yeah, 6 to 9 p.m. at City Winery, Wishes Uncorked. We have some of the best wine brands flying in from Napa and throughout the country. We have local artists, very good friends of mine, LA Panda, Joey Africa, who are auctioning off artwork that they're doing, wine-themed, with proceeds being donated back to Make-A-Wish.
Great.
And we'll also, I think the highlight of the night, too, is have art that was made by Wish recipients there.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, which will be auctioned off in a silent auction. You can walk away from the event having donated to an amazing cause with a piece of art made by a Wish recipient whose wish has impacted their life for forever.
Yeah, it's such a great organization, and there's so much data about what it does for kids to be able to fulfill a dream or a wish, as the case may be, no matter what that is, right? That it helps them.
Oh, absolutely.
It helps them mentally. It helps them, and it helps their health.
Yeah, I mean, from a medical perspective, it's there are data that support the impact of a wish on patient care and quality outcomes. Whether that is with experience on healthcare utilization, reducing the number of rehospitalizations, easing anxiety, depression, giving patients sort of a hopeful experience for the outcome of their qualifying condition, Make-A-Wish has not only impacted me, but the lives of others in a very scientific way.
Yeah.
It really has given me purpose.
Yeah. If there's a focus in life to have, who can argue with Make-A-Wish? General admission for the event is $125, and it's 3 hours of wine tastings, open bar with wine, beer, and signature cocktails, and you got the hors d'oeuvres and the silent auction, the live music. That's a deal in the charity world, and it's going to this wonderful cause, so you can check that out. It's at City Winery on in the Hot West Loop Corridor on Randolph there and it's next Thursday. Where do people go, Dr. George, if they want to find out more information about it?
Yeah, so aside from a simple Google, you can go to illinois.wish.org/uncorked to get tickets for the event.
All right. Thank you, George.
Thank
good
you
to see
so
you.
Much
Thanks
for
having me. Weighing in on the everything medical and then also telling us about that important fun event.
Hope to see you soon.
Thank you. We got more to come here on WGN Radio. We're going to talk about the weekend forecast, Tom Skilling's recovery, and much more ahead. All right, Steve Bertrand has stepped in the studio here as we want to talk about the warm, warm weekend that we're all looking forward to. And Tom Skilling has recovered really nicely from his gastric bypass surgery.
Only Tom would release that picture of himself.
if you haven't seen the picture that the WGN weather team put out, you got to check it out on social media because Tom is looking so happy and so, like, just he looks like in the best of spirits and he's wearing a shower cap essentially and his medical gown.
It's like the poofy shower cap.
You know, the right one they put on when you.
Yeah, and he's in his medical gown.
And he looks so cute and he's doing really well. And so we're happy.
Good for him.
I know.
It works out great for him.
And then he's probably still working from his hospital bed. If you know Tom, he doesn't get away very well, very easily. But he apparently, we're looking at the forecast. We've got 54 of a high, according to Skilling's forecast, on Saturday. 64 on Sunday.
How about that?
64.
I'm going to mow the yard.
Are you really?
Well, no, but.
Well, that's what you're supposed to say when it's going to be 64.
And put fertilizer in. That's what I can do. And put fertilizer in the grass.
Mm-hmm. You might be able to do that because it's a nice stretch of above normal temperatures. So that's good to know.
Daffodils are coming up.
Mm-hmm. It's all happening. Daylight saving time. Hard to say. Can't add the S there. Daylight saving time. Of course, that's how it's.
If you want to hear from the listeners, just mispronounce it.
Right. The second you say that, it's like, don't you know?
Right.
That's not how you say it. It's the saving, singular. That's this weekend. We spring forward, so don't forget about all that.
So that means it'll be warmer sooner.
Yeah. Can you believe it? It's going to be spring not too long from now. I don't want to say it yet, but I feel like this has been a pretty nice winter. Okay?
It was a terrible November. Mm. It was a very cold November.
Right.
For November.
Forgot about that.
But the rest of it's been great.
It has been. And, you know, it's just I'm thrilled. Thrilled about what's ahead here. Okay, so don't forget, we're falling back. Let's see. We spring forward. We fall back in November, spring forward now. And every state in the U.S. observes daylight saving time except Hawaii, most of Arizona, American territories of America, Samoa.
We all know about Samoa now.
It's not Thin Mints, it's Samoa.
Tulsi Gabbard picked up another delegate, I think, today from Samoa.
Did she?
Yeah, she got two now.
And then Bloomberg got the rest of the Samoa?
Yeah, four, I think, maybe. Or
okay. Yeah.
You thought they were Girl Scout cookies,
and I did,
yeah.
And most people were very happy to talk about that online. Guam, Puerto Rico, and Virgin Islands also do not observe daylight saving time, but we do. Winter's on its last legs, according to forecasters at the National Weather Service. They actually said that. They talked about how winter is on its last legs because of these temperatures and a warmer pattern kind of in store for us, at least for a while. So that's all good news.
April is the cruelest month, you know.
I've heard that. And, you know, we know that. It snows in April. We know this.
We get a nice tease.
We've had opening days.
Oh, yeah.
And beyond.
In the snow.
That are in the snow. But we'll see. Right now, it's looking pretty good. Do you see this? Bernie Sanders releases his first ad with Obama, praising him after big losses on Super Tuesday. He was really the only candidate not to sort of, you know, be a BFF with Obama.
Sure.
And then so now, after the Super Tuesday, you know, he didn't. I guess he did well, right? Of course he did. But not as well as Biden.
Well, he didn't do nearly as well as he was expected to do.
That's true.
You know, he didn't. Biden, because, you know, Biden took, what, 10 states, I think? And
he took Texas, you know,
took Texas, which is big.
Bernie got California
and North Carolina. He crushed Sanders, where Sanders put a lot of effort in. So, yeah, he had a bad night.
It was not what he had expected. And here's his new ad. Maybe this will turn things around. We're going to start seeing this a lot in Illinois as we're March 17th primary is coming up.
Bernie is somebody who has the virtue of saying exactly what he believes. Great authenticity, great passion, and is fearless. Bernie served on the Veterans Committee and got bills done.
I think people are ready for a call to action. They want honest leadership who cares about them. They want somebody who's going to fight for them. And they will find it in Bernie. That's right. Feel the burn.
I'm Bernie Sanders, and I approve this message.
I bet he does. So in Illinois, that's going to start getting major play. You're going to start seeing that here.
It's like the Bloomberg ad. Remember, you know, Bloomberg released... He released that ad with Obama praising him over and over.
Yes.
Didn't do him real
Elizabeth
well.
Elizabeth Warren had one.
But, you know, Sanders is running as the anti-establishment candidate. hugging the establishment in chief right there. So,
hey, this is politics, Steve.
Yeah, right.
Political strategist David Axelrod, we know him, former advisor to the president. President Obama carefully questioned the sincerity of that Sanders ad, tweeting, Sanders wasn't particularly close, quote-unquote, to Obama. Not particularly close.
Well, he wanted Obama to be primaried in his second term. He, you know, typically, like Donald Trump doesn't have a face a real primary challenger, Bernie Sanders thought that someone should challenge Obama in his second term.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens there. Mike Bloomberg no longer in the race. Elizabeth Warren out, too,
yeah,
as of today.
Right.
So it's really a two-way race, even though Tulsi's technically in.
Don't count Tulsi out. She's got the Samoan delegates.
Yeah, she's got a road ahead of her.
Elizabeth was sweet today. She talked about she regrets all her pinky promises she made with, you know, with people, you know, little girls and things like that. And it was kind of a touching moment.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Very sweet.
We should try to look into that. Elizabeth Warren, though, has not backed anybody yet that
not
I have
yet.
Seen. Okay. But Mike Bloomberg, by the way, has told his 3,000 journalists nationwide, or worldwide, actually, that they can now start covering him, start covering the race again. They outlined how coverage would change when he was in the race, that they were not allowed to investigate him personally, his foundation, his family, that kind of thing. But now Mike is leaving the race for president. We will return to our normal coverage of the election. I've always questioned why they weren't allowed to cover it in the first place.
Right,
that seemed
fair.
Wrong. Here's another one that caught my eye. Did you see Barbara Corcoran from the Shark Tank? You watch Shark Tank at all?
Is she the one who lost her money?
She lost $388,000. And what struck me about this is it's a phishing scam, they call it. So
right.
They kind of get a hold of your contacts list, or they get a hold of your company's email list, and they tend to send you an email from somebody you know. And so it looks legit, but usually the email is just a letter off or just something not quite right, but you don't notice it right away. Could be from your boss. It could be from an assistant. Could be from a coworker. And in this case, they basically did that. She thought it was from her assistant. It was a fake email. It said, click on this link. It was an invoice that was sent, and it was for some payment for real estate renovation. I gotta say, Steve, when you look at these now, they are so good.
It's very difficult.
They're so hard to detect. I mean, I'm looking at the invoice here. It just basically says, please see the attached invoice. Wire transfers may be directed to, and then it gives this very legit address.
That's why I've stopped paying all my bills.
Yeah, good idea.
I just don't do it.
Just to be safe.
I don't want to lose my money.
No. How can you lose money then?
Actually, though, with the wire, when it's a wire fraud or wire service transfer, that's really gone, generally.
Well, in her case, this is the thing. She got it back. And that was the news that just broke, that she talked about how I never thought I'd see it again. I couldn't believe it. But the money was wired through a German bank on the way to the scammer's Chinese account. But the bank put pressure on the German bank and they froze the money because it gave giving them enough time to show that it was a fraud. And then, boom, she got it back.
That's pretty unusual.
Isn't it?
Wonder if it happened to you or I or you or me, if we'd get our money back.
Got so much attention. I'm sure that totally helped. And then the dollar amount probably,
right,
too. They
right.
think, wow, $400,000. Finally, Lady Gaga is going to be in Wrigley Field. We know that. That's going to be pretty cool. Six stops total for her new tour. And she's coming to Wrigley. That'll be a good
concert.
Have
you ever seen Lady Gaga?
I have not. No.
No. I have not either.
No.
I have seen the Jonas Brothers.
I will say anything at Wrigley is a good concert in my book. I saw Jimmy Buffett there.
Yeah, me too.
Fabulous.
That was it.
Absolutely fabulous. All right, we're going to talk about what's coming up here on WGN throughout the rest of the next couple of hours. And then also we've got the news coming up at the top of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.